Hello, everyone, and welcome to Funky Feminist, the podcast. My name is Landon Funk, and I'm the Funky Feminist. And today, I am joined with my good friend. I feel like I can say that at this point, Autumn. Autumn Morris, and I'm going to let her kind of do a brief intro about herself before we get started.
Hey, everyone. This is Autumn Morris. You might recognize me from my work. I've done some writing with the Funky Feminist. A fun fact about me is I'm studying to be a sexologist.
Amazing. Autumn, you know, when I first reached out to you to talk about sex education and sex, I guess, in America specifically, but also the world, what were your first thoughts on things that you wanted to talk about?
Just the need for sex education in general. Like, just the deficit of sex education in the school systems, and then also throughout my research, the sex education that we do see focuses on youth, and rightfully so. But you never see sex education courses for adults, and I feel like that's huge. There's a huge deficit in that. So just kind of starting conversations like this, talking about sex, talking about sex education, and normalizing it, and taking away the stigma that comes from sex education.
Yeah, and so tell everybody kind of what you want to do with your life.
So, like I said, I'm starting to be a sexologist. Right now, I'm studying psychology, and then I want to get a master's and PhD in human sexuality. I like to be a traveling educator, just so I can fill in the gap I was just talking about, where you see sex ed in schools, it's not a good curriculum, in my opinion, but it's there, but you don't see it open to the public. So, I'd like to travel and be able to educate people of all ages, be a speaker in the media, and conferences and things of that sort, and be able to educate people on things that they are unable to find factual, informative information anywhere else, whether it be period stuff, or whether it be, you know, safe sex, or whether it be anything pertaining to LGBTQ and that community and the deficit of sex education in that area. And then also traveling around the world would be incredible, because you see, and even in Africa with the AIDS and HIV epidemic, they are in sex education and protection and things of that sort. But that's what I would like to do with my life.
Yeah, no, I think that that's so cool. That's why I kind of wanted you to talk about it, because I think there's a huge need for that. And one of the things that you mentioned super early on was the need for a better curriculum. In your area specifically, can you dive into, you know, what you would want to see as a part of the curriculum?
Number one, seeing schools talk about LGBTQ, because there are some states that refuse to talk about it. And I feel like opening up and having an inclusive curriculum that doesn't just teach typical vaginal intercourse, but, you know, how do you protect yourself if you're having sex with someone of your same gender? Because that's something I was never taught, you know, something I had to figure out. And things of that sort, how does that type of sex work? And also, I'd like to see consent taught broadly,
yes,
nationally, you know what I'm saying? Because consent was never taught to me, but I think I talked before and also wrote a piece on consent where I didn't learn about consent until someone offered it to me, and I was like, what is this? Like, why are you asking me? You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't understand the idea of consent, and I didn't understand that I was entitled to consent. That is huge and needs to be taught, and not just in one lesson in one class, but it needs to be taught throughout childhood, throughout, you know, our entire lives. It needs to be something that's included in everything that we do. Other than that, I think there just needs to be more of an open forum. I think right now there's a very strict and very narrow curriculum that just kind of teaches, okay, this is what a penis looks like, this is what a uterus looks like, in my case, this is what a baby looks like coming out of a vagina.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my experience, there was not a lot of space for questions like, why do my balls itch? You know?
Right,
like,
right.
Why do my nipples tingle? Or, like, why is one ball lower than the other? Or, you know, why are my boobs not growing? Or, how do I take care of pubic hair? Like,
right.
Smell that. You know, all kinds of stuff that kids want to know. Questions I want to know, but we're never taught in that setting. And I feel like if there is a setting to teach it in, that is it. So I think those are the three main things I would want to see in the curriculum.
Wow, there is so much to unpack there. because I agree with every single thing that you're saying. And so I'm really excited because in February, Funky Feminist is doing a whole month of consent. So our articles that are written by staff are all going to be consent-based in some way, right? Having to do with consent. Our podcast episodes are all about consent. Our event is going to be about, you know, consent. So I'm really excited because you touched on a point that's really special and necessary for our sex education that I'm really happy that we're going to get to touch on later. And the last thing that you said is just like the freedom to be vulnerable and ask questions in a non-shaming way. And I think that's really hard, especially with the current rhetoric. And so do you have any suggestions for how people can ask questions, you know, and I guess just how to express authenticity, but also if somebody comes to you with a question, instead of, you know, cringing or shaming them or shutting them down, you know, what are some best practices?
So your first question was how to ask a question?
Yeah, how to ask a question. And then if you're not the person asking the question, how to respond to a question, right? That's about sexuality, sex, your balls itching, you know, your vagina, pH, right. Whatever. Yeah.
Right. Well, when it comes to asking a question, because I have plenty of questions about sex all the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I always go to trusted adults. Me personally, like my parents, my mom has been my go-to, but I know that a lot of people don't have that. And so for me, whenever I have a question at this point, if I feel like it's something I can't go to an adult with, I read so much about sex. It's ridiculous. If you look at my bookshelf, 75% of it, the titles have the word sex in it.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. So I was able to build a community on Instagram and find like a bunch of people on social media who are like-minded, who if I can't find it in a book or if I can't go to someone, then I can add someone in the community that I've formed on social media that might have the answer. And then as far as answering a question, very similar. Just always be accepting. If someone is able to come to you and ask you a vulnerable question, like, why do my balls itch? Number one, that's awesome because they feel open enough with you to ask that question. So make sure that you're very conscious of your body language whenever they do ask questions like that or whenever someone asks questions like that. And make sure that you're just very accepting and understanding of the level of vulnerability they had to get to ask you a question like that.
Yeah, I think that all those tips are amazing. As you know, we always promote non-shaming tactics, right? And so I think that the key is, even if you don't necessarily agree with what somebody is doing, or even if you don't know the answer, I would point that person to a library or to another one of your friends that you know is more experienced in this topic or does more research or whatever. Because what we don't want to have happen is somebody be open and vulnerable and then to immediately be shut down, because that'll set back that person by a lot, you know? So one of the things that I really like about you as a writer, Autumn, is that you are able to not only ask the questions, but also you answer them within the context of your articles, right? So we talked a little bit about this earlier, but your most recent article was entitled Why I'm Still Wetting My Pants at 22. Right? Which is a great title and is so good for people to click on it because they're like, what is this person doing? But it's really just about, you had a question about your body, you went to a doctor and you understood what was happening. And so do you have any of those like aha moments where you're doing that research and then all of a sudden it just kind of clicks? Can you kind of just like, I guess, describe your process for asking questions? I mean, you just described asking questions, but what's your writing process? That's really the question that I have.
Because my love for sexology, again, comes from my lack of sex education. Mm-hmm. So whenever I sit down to write, typically I think back to what would I want to know if I was 5 years younger. Like, now I'm researching, I know some stuff, and I have to catch myself because some of the stuff I research is now common knowledge to me, and I have to separate what I've learned recently to what I knew, in high school or just coming out of high school. Back to, like, what do I wish I would have known at that time? What would have been helpful? What was I struggling with? And things of that sort. So I just find a question that I learned along the way that may seem obvious but wasn't obvious to me as 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, and just write about it. You know, a lot of my pieces are just personal experience, whether it's written as a personal experience or whether it's just written to be informative, it's always rooted from some personal interaction I've had with whatever the topic is. So that's just my process, and I just go from there in a way that I feel it would be, how would I best receive the information? So I try to write the article as such.
And I think that that's one of the things that I think people are worried about, asking the question first and or putting themselves out there, right? And so I think that what you've done, as I've told you before, you're one of our more popular writers just because you're willing to, I guess, like, spit truth bombs, right? Like, I don't know how else to say that other than, like, you just write what is there and what your body feels and what has been helpful for you. I think that's been really helpful to our followers, our readers, our fans. And so for those of you listening, I will be putting Autumn's more popular articles in the show notes for this podcast. So if you want to check out Autumn's work, you can just kind of scroll down and click some of those links. So another thing that you and I talk about is how important it is to, I guess, like, test your sexuality, try new things. And a lot of the stuff that you write about is, I tried this new thing. And so we're going to get more into, like, the actual, like, sex act itself. But, like, is there something that you tried recently, whether that be like a lube or like some kind of pH balancing thing, or, you know, is there something that, like, right now you, like, use all the time and think this is the bomb.com?
Yes. And it's going to sound ridiculous because it's probably something I should have done a long time ago. But lube with my vibrator. Never did that before. I don't know why I didn't think of that, because, I mean, I'm just naturally moist, I guess.
Yeah.
Over moist. But, yeah, I didn't think of, like, oh, I need to put it on there to get me there quicker, I guess. This is a game changer. Like, why have I not been doing this my whole life? So,
wait, I haven't used it when I masturbate. Should I be using lube when I masturbate?
Oh, my God. It made it so much, I don't even know how to describe it. It just took it to the next level for me. Hmm. Because normally, you know, if I'm not, there have been times when I want to masturbate because I have a headache or because I'm cramping. And I'm not necessarily super turned on at that time, but I know that if I just take that moment and I indulge, that I will feel so much better afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes me a minute to, like, work myself up to get there and get moist enough to where it's pleasurable.
Right.
And so I would just, you know, sit there and play with myself or use a vibrator until, you know, we were there. But it was recently I had gotten some lube from a subscription box. Put it on my vibrator, and it just immediately, wow, it was amazing. You need to do it.
Was it, like, some kind of, like, special lube, or was it just, like, straight up just, like, normal?
Just, like, it was just a regular silicone-based lube.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I'm going to backtrack. I used to be somebody who was just dry all the time. And I needed lube always. Not when I masturbated, but, like, when I had sex, for sure. And I guess everybody needs lube now when they masturbate. So the moral of this story is, use lube when you masturbate, I think.
100%.
Yes.
Absolutely.
100%. Absolutely. That's what she said. So I, like, used lube regularly. And it was great. It was fine. And then with my current partner, I've been able to, like, I get wet all the time. Like, it's, like, unreal, because it was so hard for me to get wet literally until I met this person, and now it's, like, revolutionary. And so we've used lube, like, before in our sex when we've, like, had sex multiple times in an evening and my vagina's getting a little bit worn out, but I'm still, like, horned up, but I still need lube, right? Like, I've used all different kinds of things, and I was talking to this sex educator in Nashville, who will be on our podcast later, so tune in for her episode. Her name's Sylvia Pines. But Sylvia and I were talking, and I was like, yeah, so, you know, when I was in college, I used, like, KY, his and hers, and she, like, gave me a face of, like, utter disgust of, like, oh, God. And then I go, yeah, and then I had this partner, and we used, like, coconut oil, and she gave me an even bigger face of disgust, and she was like, honey, do you have yeast infections all the time? And I was like, yes. And then she was like, you're using the wrong lube. And I was like, no. But yeah, so, and she suggested silicone-based or like a water-based lube. Water-based meaning not actual, just like straight up water, because that shit sucks when you're right. going to Pleasure Town. Have you ever had sex in like a hot tub or something? It's the worst.
I haven't.
Oh my gosh. The worst. It's everybody, like Hollywood and everybody that makes it out to be super sexy, or like sex in the shower or like whatever. And it is, because you're like wet and like in a foreign place, but like it's not water is not a lubricant. And it just is, right. It just does the opposite of what you want it to do.
So. Well, I've heard, I haven't had sex in the shower. I haven't tried this. This is what I've heard. But I've heard that silicone-based lubes are best for, like, shower sex and stuff like that. Because the water will tend to dry you out. I've tried that before. Like, it just touching myself in the shower, I can understand how that would work. But the silicone will stick to your body anyways and still make it slick. So I've heard that. I don't know how that would work in the hot tub, but at least in the shower, using a silicone-based lube might make it, you know, a little better.
Yeah. And I guess my only question then, and you might not even know the answer to this, is would it, like, does it fall off when you're in the shower?
The silicone?
Yeah. Lube? Yeah, like, does it, like, wash off?
It comes off with soap. So, like, if you're scrubbing the area with soap, then it'll come off, but with water, it doesn't.
That's nice. Cool. Well, then I will have to try that. What's the brand of lube that you're using?
Right now I'm using Pulse. It's got aloe vera and vitamin E in it, and I was like, that sounds amazing, so I'm going to try that.
And it's P-U-L-S-E?
Yeah, P-U-L-S-E.
Yeah, Pulse. Okay, got it. Cool. So that's a product that you are kind of like testing out. Like, can you talk about how important research, experimentation, that kind of thing is in like building your own sex life?
Trying different stuff has revamped my sex life. Like, the research and everything that I'm doing has revamped it completely. The article I wrote called Touch Me Baby, talking about language pertaining to different touch and sensation and stuff, changed my life. Because there was research that I had done recently, talking about the language and to that sort, and I started applying it while I was learning it, like, telling my sexual partners at the time, this is what this is called. Can you tell me if this is what you like? Or, you know, would you like friction, using friction, or just rubbing the area, or just glazing the area? You know, using different language to understand exactly what they wanted. And I felt like I was able to please my partners so much more because I was able to understand exactly what sensation they were going for. So that helped a lot. And then also just through research and understanding what works best for my anatomy, even away from sex, just talking about like intimate care, like what washes can I use on my vagina and stuff like that, has changed like my confidence level and stuff. So trying out new things to help me find new washes that I'm obsessed with, or new things that I can use on my vagina and my vulva that make me feel more confident and make me feel more sexual.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a game changer. And then give me the confidence to, like, grow out the bush sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I would have never done that before. Having different products to, like different oils, using essential oils and stuff makes me feel luxurious. Makes me want to braid my pubes sometimes.
Yeah, I've been there. I know exactly what you're talking about. That article, the Touch Me Baby, is, like, my favorite article that you've ever written, hands down. I can tell you exactly where I was when I read the first draft of it. I think I only gave you, like, 1 to 2 edits or no edits on that thing because it was so good. And it gave me the tools to use when I talked to my partner, and I even sent it to him, and I kind of like use it as like a little bit, not, I wouldn't say a baseline, but like for the first like couple months that we were dating, you know, we would, or at least I would, reference it. And I know that he read it and referenced it a couple times, you know, just in terms of trying to communicate with each other what we like. So I feel like our language is so stymied just because we were never taught how to talk about this.
Right.
And so that's another reason why I love that article. So this is me fangirling about that piece, but fangirling so hard over here. Yeah, but that's something that's really important, and I'm really happy that for you it has been beneficial. Do you think that, you know, once people learn how to communicate, that's something that either can make or break that experience, whether that's a one-night stand or like a marriage?
Yeah, I feel like language is the base of everything. And I feel that the reason why a lot of times that me, even particularly as a woman, there have been so many times where it's like I know what I want in my head, but I don't know how to tell someone who doesn't have a vagina what I mean. know? And so I can definitely see how not having the language to portray what I want and therefore not getting what I want over and over and over again could make or break a relationship. But on the other hand, having that language and being able to get exactly what I desire from my partner or partners could change it and take it to the next level. So I definitely see how that's so very influential. When I was writing that article, I think I talked about edging in it. I'm not sure if I did. If not edging, it's just like getting your partner almost to orgasm and then bringing them back down and then bringing them almost back up and then, you know, bring them back down. They kind of like a roller coaster effect. And I was like, what does that even mean? But whenever he told me, I didn't understand. I did the research and it made sense what he wanted. And then I was able to give him exactly what he desired. Whereas if I didn't understand that, I would have never been able to please him in the way that he wanted. So I can see how influential it can be.
Have you ever been edged before?
I have not.
It is like next level. Amazing. Yeah, dude, it's lit, as the kids say. And by kids, I mean me. No, it's amazing. I had my first time, my like first experience with it, I was dating this guy when I still lived in Los Angeles, and I had never done it before. And he also, it was very strange because he clearly had a lot of things going on in his life. So I can't really fault him for all of the things that just kind of hit the fan as soon as we got together. But I do still applaud him because he had like done his research and like had books on female sexuality and, you know, vaginas. And it wasn't like he had like a whole library full of them. He just had like two books that he like would reference and be like, oh, I want to try this out. And I'd be like, okay, cool, like whatever. And one of the things was like he put a blindfold on me. And I put my legs in like a butterfly position, and then he would just kind of finger slash massage my clit and like labia and all that jazz. And the first time he did it, I was so wet. It was like, oh my God. But the more he did it, he would edge. And so I would be so close, and he would know that I was close based on my breathing patterns and like all this other stuff, right? And then he would just stop, or he would like play with like my inner thigh or something. And I was like, oh my God.
My gosh.
Dude, it was like, my orgasm was so big. It was so big. Once I finally got there, it was unreal. And that like took my, what, like I knew I could have an orgasm. I'd had orgasms before. I'd had clitoral orgasms. I'd had, you know, penetration or vaginal penetration orgasms. But this one was like so ginormous that I was like, I don't, where did this come from? I don't know what just happened. Yeah, and so even now with my current partner, we had oral sex yesterday, and I was edging him, and I think he was unintentionally edging me, but he also might have intentionally been doing it. I have no idea, but it was definitely edging because I would get so close to the edge, and then he would like switch it up and like do a different tongue move, and I was like, no. What are you doing? But it was so wonderful, like, because then the orgasm at the end is just so, so big and huge and amazing. So, yeah. Anyways, edging forever, you should totally do it. So I'm going to go back and masturbate with lube, and you're going to talk to your partner about edging.
Yes.
It's going to be great.
Clearly, that's what I need to do. Like
right now. Yeah, like, forget this podcast. Like, we have a job to do. great. Well, is there anything that, like, because, like, I know that one of the things that's really helped me kind of figure out my sexuality is, like, just, like, what am I willing to do to satisfy my sexual urges? That sounds so disgusting. But, like, because, like, I hate the word urge, right? Because it's not like I, yeah, like, can't, like, I can keep it in control. Because urge makes me think of somebody who, like, you know, it's like a reflex, right? It's not, you know, anyways, besides the point, the way that I really like tested the limits the first time was I was 17, almost 18. And that was the first time I ever masturbated, which is very late in the game. But I think it's really typical for Southern women in general and just women. But I started masturbating because I had seen Black Swan, which I don't know if you've seen it, Autumn, but for those of you who are listening who haven't seen it, but it's like Natalie Portman gets cast in Swan Lake, but she's the Black Swan, and the white swan, and so she goes back and forth between the two parts, but she can't really commit to the black swan because she's never had any, like, evil experiences, quote-unquote. She's always been, like, very uptight and followed the rules and everything, and so her dance instructor tells her to go home and masturbate. And so it's the first time that she's going home and masturbating. And I really related to this person because I was also uptight and had no experience with anything. And so what I did after I watched this movie was, and again, there's also like a sex scene with her and Mila Kunis, and they're both so hot, especially Mila Kunis. And so I was like feeling it. I was like wet when I was watching it, and I was like, okay, well, this is crazy. I didn't know I was attracted to this kind of stuff. And then I tried to like rationalize it and think, well, you know, like women are apparently more like sexually attracted to just like anything having sex. And then I was like, but I see dogs having sex on the side of the road, and I'm not like, oh, that looks so fun, right? Like, that's right. Not like I don't really know where that comes from. But so I'm watching Black Swan, I'm like super turned on by these two women having sex with each other, and that's what I like think about when I'm masturbating. And then I finally am like, okay, well, I'm gonna go to a porn website. And at this point in time, I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe I'm going to a porn website. And I just immediately get attracted to lesbian porn for a multitude of reasons, but also because that's what I was into. And so I thought, when I'm like 18 years old, I'm like, I don't even know what my sexuality is anymore. I thought I was heterosexual. Plot twist, I love watching women have sex. I love thinking about, you know, me and a woman having sex. Like, I was like, what is happening to me? And so that kind of like set that like movie, and then like the watching porn was so foreign to me, and the masturbation itself was so foreign to me. And then kind of after that, I've been very open about, you know, things and like trying things and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, it literally took 18 years of my life for me to say, yeah, I think I'm going to actually explore my sexuality, rather than just like suppress it forever.
I had like a super similar experience because I think I was 19 when I first masturbated, because I didn't even know what that was. I think I told you before, like, I didn't even know what a clit was until this guy that I was being sexual with accidentally touched it, and I was like, wow. And I had the same thing where I was disgusted by the idea of watching porn, but I needed to watch porn, and I knew that's what I needed. So of course, naturally, I watched lesbian porn because that's the only category I could get to that did anything for me. And the same thing, I did the same thing where I tried to rationalize it, like, yeah, lesbian porn did it for me. And I was able to visualize myself being pleased. It's easier for me to visualize myself being pleased in my fantasy world by a woman than it is a man. Do you experience that too?
Yes. Like, so much. It used to really bother me. I'm sexually attracted to both women and men. I'm only romantically attracted to men. And so, until I kind of understood that there is a distinction between those two things, I'm sitting there, you know, I have a partner who is eating me out, and I close my eyes and I imagine that a woman is eating me out, or like something, you know, right? And I'm like, what is wrong with me? Right?
Right.
Anyways.
So, have you read She Comes First?
No. Who is this by?
Okay. It's by Ian Kerner. For men, I think, to, like, teach men how to please a woman, like, how to understand how to get a girl to climax and things of that sort, understand the female anatomy and stuff like that. But I was like, I need to read this, too, because it sounds super interesting, and I feel like I can learn stuff, too, so I just wasn't sure if you have read it or not, but I am definitely going to read it this week.
No, I'm looking at it right now on the internet. It says, Ian Kerner offers a radical new philosophy for pleasuring women in She Comes First, an essential guidebook to oral sex from the author of Be Honest, You're Not That Into Him Either. And it says it's got a cool sense of humor and a desire to inform. And Playgirl magazine cheered hallelujah upon reading this book. So, and it also says, an indispensable aid to a healthier, more fulfilling sex life for her and him. I think this is, you know, a huge crux of the feminist movement. I think it kind of gets lost along the way, where feminism ultimately supports all genders. You know, we always talk about, how do we push that? You know, we're not here to demonize men in any way, shape, or form. In this book, it's clear that, based on this description, more fulfilling sex life for her and him when, if you're in a heterosexual relationship, when the female in said relationship is pleased just as much as the man is, right? I know we've talked about, Autumn, you and me, about how we've in the past thought sex was purely like transactional, or it was like just for men, and we didn't, and both of us, you know, didn't realize, oh my God, we can actually enjoy this too. Do you want to expand upon that a little bit, or do you?
Sure.
Cool.
Like, I lost my virginity when I was like 15. And I didn't find out that women could orgasm until I was 19. So I just went all that time thinking that sex was transactional because my first sexual partner was not a loving sexual partner. Me losing my virginity was not assault, but assault did come about later on in that sexual relationship. Mm. And so that was my initial view of sex, you know, because he was my first partner. And so when he would, sex went from, you know, just being transactional in the sense that whenever he came, that was the end, to him using sex to hurt me. Oh, I'm mad at you, so I'm going to make this hurt. Things like that. So that's how I viewed sex. I'm like, okay, sex is a tool for a man, whether it's a tool to bring him pleasure, whether it's a tool of punishment, you know, whatever it is. And so that's how, that was my perspective for so long. Until I was just being sexual and freaky with somebody else and found out that certain parts of my body were sensitive and I liked the way it felt. And then that started my exploration of my own body. I'm like, wow, there's a lot of things that can be done to me sexually that would bring me pleasure. And then experimenting with other partners who wanted to please me and wanted to eat me out and wanted to, you know, eat my butt.
Yeah.
Which I feel like we need to talk about.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% ready for that butt talk. Well, so one of the things that I thought about earlier in the podcast and that I completely forgot to bring up until right now was you said that you, quote unquote, discovered your clit after a partner that you had touched it. And then you kind of played with it and figured it out. When I was a kid, we would always, in the pool, there was, like, those, like, jets, right?
Uh-huh.
And, like, we would always, like, get close to the jets and, like, try and, like, sit on them. So from the time I was, like, 10 until I realized what was happening, I just thought, oh, this is going to be super great and this feels really good. I didn't realize that, the, like, the pressure coming out of the pool jet was, in fact, a form of, like, well, I guess not really masturbation because it's an outside force. But it was like me discovering my clit, and I had not connected any of these dots until probably like I was 18 or 19.
Wow.
Right?
I've heard a lot of similar stories where people are like, whether it's a pool deck or like somebody's talking about like using, you know, like the detachable shower heads and stuff.
Yeah.
When some people would shower and use it, you know, detach it, use it to wash off their body and then like stub at their vagina and be like, wow, that feels great. But I've heard a lot of like that.
Yeah, no, like one time it was me and my friend, her name was Peyton, and Peyton is Peyton, she's still alive. I don't know why I said was, weird. But Peyton and I were, she's comes from a very wealthy family, and so she had taken me, or she took me on some like crazy trip on their private plane, and like I've since never been on another private plane, but this trip was dope. And at their like condo penthouse situation in Florida, they had this hot tub, and Peyton and I would go out every night to the hot tub, and literally we would get on separate jets and just sit there and talk while these jets were hitting our clit. And we, and that was just kind of like us, like I said, like figuring it out. But to me, it's like super, and like neither one of us was like orgasming. We were just like, oh, this feels super good. Like, let's, you know, let's sit on them. To me, it's so weird, but it's also like,
you want to go get a hot tub.
Yeah, dude, hot tubs forever.
Because I'm like visualizing, like feeling this sensation that you're referring to, because I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, now I'm thinking, how can I do this in my bathtub after this?
Right. We have a to-do list of things.
We definitely do. And then we'll circle back when it comes time for consent month. And then we can talk all about consent. But first, we're going to recap what we learned. Yeah. Anyways, so butt stuff.
Butt stuff.
I've heard this story, but our listeners haven't. Tell us how you first got, like, intrigued about butt stuff.
Butt stuff. Okay. So, originally, I was like, I will never do anything sexually pertaining to my butt because I cannot, like, it makes me think I'm losing my butt virginity, and I'm like, this hole is never going to go back to what it was before.
Yes.
It's just going to hang down. Have you ever heard the horror stories of, like, women's uteruses, like, inverting and coming out?
What? No. What?
Like, after, like, childbirth or, like, I don't know. I'm sure it's extreme cases. I'm sure it's not normal, but I have heard some horror stories of that happening, so that's what I'm envisioning is, like, my colon inverting and coming out of my butthole.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was staying away from that, but then one day I was with a partner, and I was just kind of giving him free rein to do whatever he wanted to do in that moment, and he was eating me out, and then I felt him move on down to my butt, and I was like, whoa, what are you doing? I don't know the last time I showered. I'm not sure that's safe. So we ended up stopping. And then he tried it again another time. And I let him go do it for a little bit longer. But I was like, nah. Like, my mentality, like, my mental space could not get me to the point of just being like, oh, this sensation feels good. Because It never felt bad. It's just my head was like, oh, this is not right. This is not what we're supposed to do. You know, my butthole's going to fall off. And so then, I want to say it was the third time, I was just like, you know what? He's doing this. He clearly has done this before, whether it's my butthole or someone else's. A butthole will get eaten by his mouth. So we're just going to let him do it. And so I just kind of, like, let go. And it took me a while to get past that mental block of, wow, too strong. And, like, I kept jumping and, like, trying to get away, but, like, wanting to stay at the same time. And then finally I was just able to relax, and it felt amazing.
I have a follow-up question. I've had, like, fingers up there, but never, you know, a penis or... And, like, my butthole's been licked, like, twice. But it was never something that was, like, an extended thing. It was just kind of like a quick lick, and then we're done. What kind of got you to be less anxious about it? Because that is literally my number one fear, is I know that when it gets down to it, my butthole, it's already hella small, is going to just shrink and shrink and shrink.
So I came to realize that any time I was going to be with that partner, he was probably going to try it. So I think my biggest anxiety was, like, that is my butthole. Everything else is just being prepared, being mentally prepared beforehand, because I feel like doing it in the moment, like, just as a surprise, like, oh, I'm going to stick a finger up your butt. It's just, you don't have enough time to get rid of that anxiety, but if you kind of prep yourself.
To me, I think that's the biggest issue with butt stuff in general for a lot of people who are engaging in butt stuff, right? Is like, is my butthole clean enough to engage in butt stuff? So I was talking same-sex educator, and she was like, yo, dude, every time I've had anal sex, I have never prepared, and I have never shit on anyone in my entire life. And I was like, oh, rad, okay. So I think for people who are just starting out, you know, do what makes you feel comfortable, ultimately. And if anxiety gets eased because you had a shower beforehand and you scrubbed your butt, then that's up to you, right? And that made you feel more comfortable and more receptive. So I think that's something that's really cool and important for any, because you're already preparing, you know, you're already like, you know, you want to put on something sexy, or you wear a certain kind of underwear, or, you know, even like when my partner comes over, I always wear my Thinks underwear, which are technically period proof underwear, and I do use them as such. But also, my partner and I, when we have sex and there's, like, cum everywhere, it's wonderful because they, like, catch the cum, and it doesn't, like, ruin the pair of underwear for that whole evening, because they're already, like, super absorbent, and, like, that's what they're made to do, right? And so I'm already doing that step. I'm already there. The least I can do is just, like, have a shower and make sure that my butt is clean. So you said that you've experimented a little bit farther with your butt play, with, like, fingers and that kind of thing. Do you ever think, like, I get really nervous about, well, A, I get nervous about incorporating toys into sex in general. But I also know that I, like, kind of like that small thing in butt sensation. And so I've been talking to sex shops and my friends who do this, but I'm very much thinking about getting, like, just, like, a very soft beginner level butt plug. But I'm also like, how weird is that? So I don't know.
I think it's weird.
You don't think it's weird?
No, I think it's capitalizing on your pleasure. Because it's easy because the way I've had someone stick their fingers in my butt, they're usually eating me out.
Right.
So the fingers are just right there, right? Mm-hmm. But if someone is, you know, having intercourse with you, then it's harder to get the fingers there in the way, because, I mean, your face is not up in your butthole at that, or their face, rather, isn't in your butthole at that time to be able to see exactly where they're going with it and be more precise. Mm-hmm. But I think that would be perfect for using the butt plug.
Mm.
Or even if they are giving you oral sex, then they can focus more on one area while you're still getting pleasure in both areas.
Yes.
I've never tried it, but I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to the sex shop where we're going to have our event tomorrow. So I will, this is another part of my action plan for, you know, the next time we talk. I will purchase a butt plug. I will use it. And then when we reconvene, I'll tell you all about it. Or I'll probably write about it low key, because I do love to write about sex stuff. Anyways. Cool. Well, I guess kind of my last thing to kind of bring everything back to just basic sex education, because I think that discussing personal pleasures and what we've experimented with and all that kind of stuff is sex education in and of itself, because we're first and foremost discussing it. But, you know, we talked about the curriculum earlier in the call. Was there something that in your personal sex education experience that either deterred you from wanting to have sex, or do you feel like you were equipped to have sex after the sex ed that you had in school or with your parents?
I don't think so. My parents did a good job of kind of explaining the mechanics of it, but still there is a huge piece missing there for me, because like I said, I didn't understand the idea of my personal pleasure for a long time after I started having sex. When I had sex ed, as a 14-year-old, I didn't put two and two together. I just saw the video of a baby head coming out of a vagina, and it didn't do much for me as far as understanding my body and understanding what a sexual exchange should be like. What is the difference between, you know, abuse and pleasure and consent, like we mentioned, and sensations and things of that sort. So I really do wish that I had learned that piece of it before I became sexually active, because I feel like that would have made a huge difference. I knew at the time that sex was supposed to be pleasurable. It was supposed to be, like, it was supposed to be something that everybody liked. So understanding the difference between pleasure and abuse was probably the biggest thing that I wish that I had in my arsenal whenever I became sexually active.
Well, is there anything that you wanted, I guess, to add, Autumn, to any part of our conversation that you felt like you didn't have a chance to kind of elaborate on, or if there's like a topic that you want to visit right now that we didn't touch on?
I can't think of anything off the top. Well, can I share a fun fact that I found out today?
Yeah, 100%. Let's hear it.
Okay. So I was just doing research on different like sex tech and brands and things of that sort, or brands that make toys or whatever. I found this company that makes instead of a menstrual cup, it makes a menstrual disc. Have you ever heard of menstrual discs before?
Is it kind of like a condom that you put in your vagina? It's like plastic?
It's like, to me it looks like a Uva ring, except it's just got plastic connecting.
Yes, yes.
So I had never heard of that before, and apparently you use it to have period sex. Like, you just put it in.
What?
I mean, you don't just use it to have sex. You can use it just like you use a diva cup or whatever menstrual cup you use. But I thought that was so cool. If I had a disc like that, I feel like it would change things drastically for me.
Yeah, you definitely still have to put, like, a towel down, like, just for, like, spare blood stuff. But I do think that could definitely change the game in terms of just like basic cleanup, because that is the problem with period sex. I even like wrote an article about this, because I think periods are stigmatized and sex is stigmatized, and that's when you combine the two, it's like, oh god, the world is going to explode. Right. Autumn, if people wanted to continue this conversation that you and I are having with you, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram at LifeXMo. And then also my new Instagram, which is not out yet, but should be out by the time this podcast closed, which is Speaking of Sex.
Speaking of Sex, is there any, is that all like one smushed together?
Yeah.
amazing. She's super responsive and she's amazing. I mean, you have such a high interaction rate, dude. Like, I watch your stories and you're just like, ask me a question. And people will ask you like a bajillion questions. And then your story turns out to be like 40 things long. And I'm like, what? What is happening here? I'm nowhere close to that popular. Anyways, she's super responsive. She loves to hear from you guys. And, you know, that's it for this episode.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to this week's episode of Funky Feminist, the podcast. My name is Landon Funk, and I'm the Funky Feminist. If you like what you heard, please like or leave a comment on whatever streaming platform you're currently listening to. We want to hear from you in order to make this podcast the absolute best podcast you listen to. Each week, Funky Feminist, the podcast, will have a new episode on Mondays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to support us and the podcast, you can visit our Patreon at www.patreon.com/funkyfeminist and become a producer of the show. Producers will be mentioned by name at the start and end of each episode, get exclusive Funky Feminist merch, and shout-outs on our social media. Funky Feminist, the podcast, is sponsored by Thinks. Their washable, reusable undies absorb your period and are a more sustainable solution than single-use disposable products. Depending on your flow, light, medium, heavy, Thinks can replace pads and tampons or be worn with tampons and cups for extra protection. They're like regular underwear, but so much better, and trust me on this. I wear Thinks almost every single day. I use them as regular underwear because I'm a little bit dischargy and when I'm on my period, and they have quite literally changed my life. Get your pair of Thinks now. Go to www.shethinks.com. At checkout, don't forget to add your $10 discount code FUNKY, F-U-N-K-Y. Once again, that's www.shethinks.com and enter the discount code FUNKY. Funky Feminist, the podcast, was created by Landon Funk, starring Landon Funk, edited by Shelby Goldsmith, and has original music by DNTST.